Hey, good morning. This is Jamie from Stillmire Games. Sorry I'm running a few minutes late today, but I am happy to be here to share Stillmire Games news, to discuss some random topics like what I've been playing recently, what I've been doing recently, and to answer your questions. Any non-spoiler questions you may have, I am happy to answer today. Overall, I don't think I have any big Stillmire Games updates today. Obviously, I'm doing a lot of little things with Stillmire Games, getting ready for things, but I don't think I have any announcements or anything like that today. But maybe I'll come upon something as we chat. Hey, Tony. Hey, Tim. Thanks for joining me today. I'll start out with chocolate of the day because I seem to be forgetting that from time to time. I got a wonderful box of chocolates from a friend, a shareholder friend here at Stillmire Games, from Hawaii. And so I've really been enjoying that box of chocolates. There are a variety of different special chocolate bars. I just finished off one that was banana chocolate, like dark chocolate banana, and one that was has mango in it. That's also really, really good. So I'm enjoying those as my chocolate of the day. What is your indulgence of the day? Carlos always comes prepared for a question. I appreciate that, Carlos. He says, I found a back to the shelf video where you were invited to, in which you played a game where someone read a part of a board game manual and you needed to guess the game. I thought it was really funny. What's your favorite kind of game related to board games? Favorite game of that kind? Okay, so like, I don't know, like, I don't even know how to say that style of game, but I know what you're talking about. What would be my favorite like that? Because I see sometimes people like, so I guess an example of this would be someone posts like a piece, a photo of a punch board they've already punched. They say, what game did this come from? Or a photo of a token and they say, what game did this come from? Those don't usually hook me. I mean, I get why people have fun with that. They don't usually hook me. I really like the board game manual one to read a little part of that. That was a fun little guessing game to try to guess the game. Also, some creators do like, they give the they do a video where they blindfold one of the people and they give them a box and that person has to guess like based on the shape of the box and how heavy it is, what game it is. That's neat. I never actually tried that, but I like the manual one. That's a fun one to try. Tim says, did the game announcement get pushed back? So Tim, originally, like last week, I talked about this a little bit. Originally, I was hoping to release to announce our new product last week when during our e-newsletter. No, was it last week? It was a little earlier, 2 weeks ago. But at the time, we had the news that the freight shipment for this product was taking a long time, as freight shipments do these days. And so I didn't want to announce it more than a month in advance of when we are hoping to receive it at various fulfillment centers and thus do the pre-order for it. So 2 weeks ago, I did announce that we had pushed the announcement back for this new product to ideally, hopefully, February 2nd. So that's the plan for that new product. Yeah. Mike says, nice Red Rising shirt. Yeah, wearing my Howler shirt today. Today is a day of a lot of, actually, it's not related, nothing that I'm doing today is related to Red Rising, but today I am, well, actually, one thing that's kind of related, I'll throw this out there, is that I just finished reading the Expanse series of books, the final book in the wonderful sci-fi series, The Expanse. Not Red Rising, but it's a series that, well, actually, it doesn't exactly stick to our solar system, but I consider them in the same realm of science fiction, Red Rising and The Expanse. And I really enjoy the series. It came to a wonderful, great finale. I haven't been watching the show, but apparently the finale for the show followed a much earlier subplot, as far as I can tell, of the books. The books go well beyond, I think, what the show ended up doing. And so if you haven't read the books but you've enjoyed the show, I'd highly recommend checking out the books because there's a pretty big world that opens up that's fun to explore. Let me ask, before I forget real quick, is the mic okay today? I'm trying to keep the mic a little bit farther away. Last week, I heard there was some feedback coming from the mic. Hopefully that's okay. If the volume's okay, if there's no feedback coming from it, let me know if that's doing okay with my new setup here. What was the other thing I was gonna say in regards to Mike's question? Oh, yeah, today is the day of, I'm working on a rule book for a prototype that I'm sending out for blind play testing. And I have Alan is coming over, my co-founder Alan is coming over to play test a prototype submission that was submitted to us, that was pitched to us. And related to that, I actually just yesterday filmed a detailed video about how to pitch your game to publishers. If you have a game that you've been working on and you want to pitch that game to publishers, I filmed a video about that. It won't go live for about a month. I'm about a month ahead of my Sunday videos. But it was fun to do, and I think I'll probably do an article about that as well when the video comes out, so you can just read it if you don't want to watch the video. to get you an idea of how the process works, just a little bit, the game that we're going to actually get to the table today has already gone through several steps of the process where this person submitted their game on our submission form on our website, which is the correct way to go. Submit that on the submission form. And then Alan reviews those submissions, and he had some back and forth dialogue with this game designer to get a feel for who they were and what this game design was all about. And after reading the rule book and learning more about it, Alan decided that it was worth playing, that we were excited enough by this game to play it. And so that's how it is actually getting to the table here. The getting to the table part is far from the first step of the game design or the game pitch, game submission process. So I'm excited to see that. We haven't seen a new submission in a little while that's gotten through those first few layers. So I'm excited to see what he brings to the table. And I also have another prototype that I'm playtesting today later on. Not one that's being submitted, one that we've already accepted. That's in the playtesting stage. Hey, Connor is here today. Connor from Inside Up Games. Connor, I saw that you're hiring. How's that hiring process going right now? You have to refresh me on what who you're hiring for in your company at Inside Up Games. But yeah, let me know more about that in the comments below, Connor. I hope you're doing well. Chris says, "Did I get my Geek Way to the West tickets yet?" And indeed, I did. On Friday, Geek Way to the West tickets went on sale. This is the convention in St. Louis that I love to attend each year. And their convention this year, I think, is on May 9th through the 12th, if I'm getting those dates right. And the tickets went on sale last Friday. So I definitely have my ticket for that event, and I'm very much looking forward to it. It's the type of convention where you just come and play games for a couple days. Just sit down and play games with a wide variety of people, a wide variety of very welcoming people, from what I found. I say that particularly as an introvert who it would be very easy for me to just stick to my own group of friends, but I often try to pull in other people or just go to random tables and play games with random people like Geekway. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't work out, but usually, at the very least, people are very welcoming to that idea. Dave says that he has 18 inches of snow in Ohio. That's quite a bit of snow. It's clear, crisp and cold, but clear and sunny here in St. Louis. I actually played, we had got a little bit of snow this past weekend, and I played disc golf in about, I don't know, an inch and a half of snow. It didn't really impact the disc golf all that much, except the discs had an interesting skip, or sometimes they just didn't skip, they just buried in the snow. But yeah, I had a fun time playing disc golf. That was, I think, my first session of disc golf in the snow, or with snow on the ground. It wasn't actively snowing at the time. Tim says, "Have I been to Hawaii?" He says he's planning his third trip. He loves Maui. I have been to Hawaii. It's been like 15 years now, I think. It's been a long time since I've been to Hawaii, and I loved it. It was the best airport experience I've ever had because the Hawaiian airport is somewhat open air. Tim, you know this, but I think other people who haven't been there don't know this. And it is just like this refreshing joy of an airport to walk through as you enter Hawaii or as you depart from Hawaii. So yeah, highly recommend Hawaii, even just for the airport. I also loved the shaved ice in Hawaii, a random thing from Hawaii, but that was my first experience with like really, really good shaved ice. Very different than like the hard, crackly snow cones that you might get at a baseball ballpark. It's really fine shaved ice over in Hawaii. Let's see, just looking through comments here. Christopher says, "Have I tried the Coffee Traders board game?" I haven't. A friend has it, but I have not played that yet. I need to. A lot of people are commenting on the Howler shirt that I'm wearing here from Red Rising. Let's see. Okay, people are saying the mic does sound better this week. Mark commented on the little sale we had. Yeah, we had a little flash sale this past weekend. Just for future reference, if you didn't hear about this sale, the sale came from a demographic survey that I sent out a month and a half ago. And on that survey, one of the questions that I asked is there a game from Stonemaier Games that you're really hoping to own, but you don't own it yet? And it's kind of near the end of the survey, so we're gathering all this information that's very helpful to us as we cater our upcoming portfolio for you, the things that we make for you, for those who filled out this demographic survey. And at the end, we ask this question. And typically, a month or so later, I follow up with those people and I put that particular game on sale. And I say, thank you for letting us know about this. If you want to get this game, here's a little flash sale so you can get that game. So keep that in mind next year. If you subscribe to our e-newsletter, it really is very helpful for us to get that demographic data. And we try to give back to you by offering a special sale based on the game from some of our games that you want to own but don't own yet. And of course, we include our 20-day price guarantee. So if you bought, like Mark mentioned, that he got Scythe. If Mark had happened to buy Scythe like a week or so ago and he bought it at a higher price, we don't want Mark to regret that he already bought it. And so within 20 days, he can see this sale. He can come back to us and say, "Hey, Jamie, I saw you had this sale. I just bought it a couple weeks ago. Can I get the discount?" And we would have provided Mark with a discount to make up for that difference between the two. Chad says, "What's my favorite alien race and why?" So just in general, it sounds like a general sci-fi question. My favorite alien race. I have a terrible memory for such things, Chad, but there is an author. Oh, what is this author's name? She's an amazing author who writes really, really interesting alien characters. Let me see if I can find her name, because I think it is worth mentioning. Lonely Planet, Far Away. What is the name of this author? I'm not going to think of it. Off the top of my head, unfortunately. Chad, I'll have to come back to that question. It's an author, she has very distinct titles that I can never remember of her books. And she is just fantastic at describing unique aliens. Usually it's like a ship full of a few different characters, and each character is a different type of species, a different alien, a different heritage, cultural heritage. And each one is so unique, and the way she unravels how this character perceives the world and goes about living in the world and in space and the spaceships is just fascinating. And I'm kicking myself because I'm not remembering who this author is. Let me I'm going to look it up real quick because it's worth sharing this. I can here. This is a better place to look. I keep track of all the movies and books that I read from year to year because I forget these things. And okay, her name is Becky Chambers. She writes a series called The Galaxy and the Ground Within. And she just writes amazing characters and alien characters. And also actually a book that really reminded me of that series is Shards of Earth by Adrian Tchaikovsky. A great book, one of my favorite books from last year. And he kind of followed a similar method. He has a ship that you're following, a crew that you're following, and he had very distinct, different alien creatures that are occupying that ship, an alien crew, and they each had something very unique about them. I don't want to, I probably shouldn't spoil anything about that because the books, like part of the great things about these books is they unravel how these people work, how these characters work throughout the books. So check that out. Check out the Wayfarer series by Becky Chambers or Shards of Earth by Adrian Tchaikovsky. Big Dan says, "Good afternoon from Wales. He just started Charterstone with his husband and in-laws and really loving it." I'm glad to hear that. Thank you so much. I'm glad you're having fun with this so far. He says, "There is something really fun in the index mechanism. The anticipation of what you get is really exciting. Have you thought of incorporating that into other games?" The idea of kind of unlocking something and referring to the index and having to tell you what to get out of it. It was I mean, that was a fun but also very difficult part to design of Charterstone. It isn't something that I understand your question here. It isn't something that I could say like, okay, we have this game. I have Viticulture. How can I put an index in Viticulture? Charterstone was kind of designed around that concept of opening crates and referring to those crates in the index. There are other games that do it. Sleeping Gods has something very similar to that. Some other legacy style games do it, but Sleeping Gods in particular remind me of that quite a bit. And also to a certain extent, role player adventures. Have I thought about doing another game? Kind of, but not exactly the way that works. Like the way it works in Charterstone is you say, okay, look up what is in crate 45, and crate 45 will give you maybe three or four cards, maybe even more that you were taking out of the index, or even telling you to open a tuck box. And that specific type, that specific style of index, I have not explored in another game, and I don't know if I will. But I think we will have other games where I say like, go get this specific card, go find this specific card, and add it to your hand or add it to a shared deck, things like that. Yeah. Kai Stark is a Wingamut designer. Kai Stark is joining us today. Let's see. And I do see, I just skipped over a question intentionally. I saw a spoiler question or a question that could be perceived as a spoiler. And just our general philosophy is when I'm ready to announce something, if there is something to announce, I'll announce it. But I don't answer spoiler questions here. I love your curiosity and your anticipation. But yeah, when we're ready to announce something, if something will exist, I will definitely share it out loud and in our e-newsletter and on our website, all that kind of stuff, social media. Tim says, when will you put your wish list up for games that you want to play at Geekway? He'd like to learn in advance this time. Tim, I typically put that list up maybe a week or two in advance of Geekway. So probably early May is when I'll share the list of games that I'm looking forward to playing for the first time at Geekway to the West. Clint also says that he loves my Red Rising shirt here. Okay, Connor has an answer real quick. Let me do Connor's answer, and then I'll come over to a few. Just I don't have any big topics today, but little topics to cover. He says Connor is hiring for a social media and marketing manager. He says he's had a ton of great submissions and interviews start tomorrow. It feels a little surreal. He says, how many employees is Stillmire Games running with now, and when is your planned purchase of Asmodee? Currently, we have three full-time employees and two part-time employees. My co-founder Alan, Altama, lead designer and director Morton are the two part-time employees, and then it's Joe, Alex, and I as the full-time employees. And we also get pretty consistent help from web developer Dave, graphic designer Christine, and a new retail relationship manager Susanna, and US replacement parts coordinator Dave. And then, as you know, Connor, I think sometimes this is lost, and I'm glad you prompted me to answer this. But I think sometimes it's lost that there are hundreds of people at Stillmire Games who are involved in the creative process. Not necessarily for every game, but on an ongoing basis, there are easily over 100 people involved in that. So I hope that's important to keep in mind when you look at game companies, not you, Connor, but other people who are looking at game companies, looking at perhaps diversity in game companies, things like that. I would highly recommend not limiting that to the one or two people that run the company, but also the many other people, the play testers, the proofreaders, the graphic designers, the artists, the lawyers, the accountants, all the other people that go into, and the game designers in particular, who go into making these products a reality on an ongoing basis. A lot of people play pretty significant roles on an ongoing basis and get paid to do so. Yeah. Clint says, am I planning a new Wingspan edition like you plan on Viticulture this year? So, Clint, there is no new Viticulture edition. I don't know. I think there was. I don't know where that came from. There is also no new Wingspan edition. We are planning a Wingspan expansion for this year, and there is a Viticulture expansion. But an expansion is just something that expands the core game. It is not a new edition of the game. And hopefully, maybe it was just a typo here. But if there are rumors somewhere that we are making a new Viticulture edition, please quash them, because that is definitely not something that we are doing. Or Wingspan too, either way. Mark says, if I tried playing Wordle, he says it's a game where you try and guess a five-letter word every day with six turns where position clues are given for each turn. I've seen many people posting about it on social media, but no, I haven't played Wordle. Jaya says, with the new Viticulture expansion, will we get a new bigger box? That's a great question, but again, I don't answer spoiler questions on these live casts. So when if we have something in the works that we're going to make, we will announce it when we've actually announced it. Yeah. Tim says his fingers are crossed for his metal mechs and neoprene mats for Wingspan to find their way to Indiana. They've ended up in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and been stuck in Georgia with no new updates. Man, I'm sorry to hear that, Tim. We shipped it from St. Louis, and so it's very odd that it would go in such a roundabout way. That's truly like it looked like it zoomed right past Indiana and ended up in the south in Georgia. That's very odd. Hopefully, they finally make their way there. I'm sorry to hear that, Tim. That's very, very odd. Let's see. Logan says, any ideas how often new promos for Rolling Realms will be released? It'll be from time to time. It's hard to say right now because with the original game, right around that time, we started working on the first batch of three promos. And so we made three promos. We've released two of them so far, and we have the third one in stock. We're ready to sell it at the right time. And then the game came out. We wanted to see how people received it, if people were excited about the promos. And then we started designing a lot more promos, and we're starting to put them into production. But production plus freight shipping usually takes around 6 to 7 months now. So there's going to be a gap for a little while where we don't have anything, and then we'll have a lot of promos on hand to release at the right time. And so sometimes I'm guessing it'll be maybe once every other month. But sometimes we might release one month. There might be a convention where we release another one, but also we'll have it on our web store. There might be a time where one of these, you know how the promos are connected to other games now from other publishers. The publisher might have a new expansion coming out, and so we might release a promo that's related to that game because the timing just happens to work out. Things like that. So we're staying pretty flexible on it, but overall, I think it'll be about once every other month for a while, starting in probably 2023, but we should have some new ones by the end of 2022 as well. Pierre says, "Have I dabbled in Hex and Counter war games?" I have not. I do play some games with direct combat and direct conflict, but war games in general just aren't a genre that I really enjoy playing. Yeah. But if you have a favorite to recommend, I'm happy to think about it and hear why you really enjoy it. Some games that I played recently, other than disc golf, where I learned and played Caper, or I was taught, thanks to a friend who taught Caper. And we played twice. The Caper Europe, the new version of Caper that just came out. I meant to have it in front of me here. I don't have it right next to me. We also finished our 7-game campaign of Robin Hood and really enjoyed it. The Adventures of Robin Hood. We really enjoyed that. Had a great time with that. And I played Russian Railroads on Board Game Arena last Friday. I had a great time with that. I also received some games in the mail that I have here. I received the Tussie Mussie expansion pack. I am very excited about that. I received Stardew Valley. I'm excited. It's still in shrink, but I just received it. But I'm very excited to check out this game. I've played the video game, the digital game, a little bit, and I am really excited to try out Merchants of the Dark Road. I got my Kickstarter copy just the other day. Looks like a really beautiful production here. I'm really excited to give this a try and see how it goes. I know very little about it. I just saw that it looked awesome. I trust the publishers. I love Andrew Bosley's art, Bosley's art, and I'm just looking to see if I recognize the designer, but I don't. But oh no, I do. Brian. Okay, Brian's the designer. I guess that was graphic design. Brian is a great local designer over in Illinois. Oh, I'm really excited about that. Merchants of the Dark Road. Chad says, "Have I read Terry Brooks? The Shannara series was my favorite for as long as I can remember, but his stories are really fun." I don't think I actually have read Terry Brooks. I don't think I have. Yeah, if you have a starting point, feel free to recommend one. Mike points out that Viticulture has a new insert, but it isn't a new edition. Maybe that was the source of the confusion. Perhaps. Yeah, that's certainly true, Mike. We do make tiny tweaks to our games over time. I think Viticulture is in its 21st printing at this point, and we did update the insert a little bit in the last printing and moving forward so that it can have a, I don't know, a better insert. So that's totally possible. Good point, Mike. And Clint clarifies, yes, he thought Viticulture will get a new insert design. Yes, Viticulture has a new insert design, but it isn't a new edition. A new edition is when you like fully revamp the art and the design, typically both of a game. And this is just a little tweak to the insert. Chad says, "I recently watched your interview with Mike DeLisio. Very insightful. Were you surprised that Scythe is his number one game?" Maybe a little bit. It's been a little while since I did that interview, but Mike, I think, typically plays solo and I know Morton and his team do an awesome job with the solo versions of our games, but I'm not all that involved in the solo community. And so, like, if Mike does a solo game review, I don't always watch it, but I do love hearing his opinions when he joins like the Four Squares Dice Tower reviews. It was, I guess, a little bit of a surprise, but also not a surprise that people love the Altama solo version of Scythe. That's not a surprise. Bruno says, I think Bruno asked me this every week. If I had the chance to play Brazil Imperial, it's heavily inspired by Scythe. I've still not played that, Bruno. I'll have to put that on my Geekway list to try. So I think probably the earliest that I would play it is May. So feel free to ask me after May, and we'll see. Clint says, "If I hadn't gotten the license for the Red Rising intellectual property, would I still publish a game with the same mechanisms? Where would you get the names for the cards? And lastly, what would you name the game?" So this was something that we encountered at a certain point where we thought we had the license, and then it got caught up with the Red Rising lawyers for a long time, and we had just hadn't heard from them in a long time, and I wrote back to Pierce and his agent, and I was like, The game is ready. It's final. We're ready to go with this game, ready to move forward. And we understand if it's not going to happen, but we'd like to know either way, just so we can do something with this game that we really love. And at that time, if Pierce and his agent had said, we just can't do it. The lawyers are not able to make this happen. Because I think Pierce wanted to make it happen, but I think maybe it was starting to get tied up in some other TV film rights, that type of thing. If that had happened, we would have, yeah. I love the game so much that we would have found a way to publish it. We probably would have just created our own world with hopefully a unique enough cast system that it wouldn't be a direct ripoff. But we definitely would have acknowledged the influence of Red Rising. And we probably would have said, like, this is a game. I love Red Rising. This is a game inspired by the world of Red Rising. This is not actually a Red Rising game. Kind of like in what Nemesis did. Like, Nemesis is essentially Aliens, the game, but it pays homage to Aliens without being an Aliens IP. So that's probably what we would have done. I don't know what we would have called it, though. Yeah. Chad says he's sorry that my 49ers are going to lose to the Packers on Saturday. You're gonna watch the game? I probably won't watch. I might watch a little bit. I don't watch a lot of live football these days, but I do pay attention when the games are live. And yeah, you have a very good team. I wish the Packers the best in this game. I did not expect the 49ers to beat the Cowboys, and so I wouldn't expect them to beat the number one seed with a week of rest. But yeah, hopefully it'll be a good, entertaining game either way, whoever wins. Chad says the best place to start with Terry Brooks is the first Shannara book, The Sword of Shannara. And Chad, let me ask you this. I'm just curious, because I did watch the first episode of a TV show based on his Shannara world, and I thought it was really bad. Like almost unwatchable. I don't even know if I finished the first episode, or maybe I finished, but definitely did not watch the second episode. It just kind of felt like a bunch of fantasy tropes lumped together. Probably just the TV show. Maybe could you reassure me that the books are better than the TV show, if you did check out the TV show as well? And that was just my impression. That's my opinion. I understand if some people really love that TV show. I did not enjoy it, and it did not make me want to read the books, which I think is kind of a unfortunate thing, especially if the books are quite different from that TV show. Sorry, Facebook skipping past some questions here. Michael is joining us live, maybe for the first time. Thanks for dropping by, Michael. And Tim says he's got the news coming out for our Red Rising showcase on the 29th. That's right. Tim is hosting a Red Rising event related to mostly the game, but also the book a little bit at Your Brother's Bookstore in Evansville, Indiana. If you're in that area and want to drop by and learn more about the Red Rising game or book, feel free to drop by that bookstore, Your Brother's Bookstore. Thanks for mentioning that, Tim. And Christopher said it would have been fun to see Red Rising with a Euphoria theme. And yeah, that's a great idea, Christopher. Yeah, that would have been a good approach for us to take, to use the theme of Euphoria. I don't know how we would have quite done it with the I don't know what, 13, 14 different color casts in Red Rising compared to the four different factions in Euphoria, but that probably would have been a good fit, good world fit to use Euphoria for that. Kim says that she also thought the Shannara TV show was horrible, and Chad thought the same thing. Okay, I'm glad well, I know a lot of people probably worked really hard on that show. I don't mean to knock the show, but yeah, I'm glad to hear that it wasn't indicative of the quality of the books themselves. Yeah. Okay, Chad also says the books are far better. The show is MTV. Oh, yeah, it was an MTV show. Yeah. George says, is Megan still working on some puzzles? If yes, what's the latest one about, like, the theme? So Megan currently has three completed puzzles on her puzzle table and one incomplete puzzle on our gaming table. It's a Where's Waldo, or Where's Wally puzzle, I think, in the UK. Where's Waldo puzzle. I believe it is a 3,000 piece puzzle on our gaming table that she's working on right now. It'll probably take her maybe a week to get through. Yeah, but I love that. I walked into the bedroom the other day to see the puzzles on the table, and that she has three complete puzzles that she can't bear to take down yet because they look good. They're beautiful images. Yeah. Oh, and yeah. So there's Where's Waldo. The other themes are, I think there's one with cats on it. I think there's one with a giant sea turtle on it, and then there's one with a map of the U.S. I think on it. I think those are the three. National parks. National parks is the third one. I'll go to back to comments in a second, but just to talk about a few of the things that I've mentioned on my on the blog and the YouTube channel recently. Lydia, our diversity, equity, and inclusion consultant, posted a wonderful post on Monday, on Martin Luther King Day, about DEI, about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Great post if you want to check that out to see her thoughts on DEI. And also I posted a video on Sunday about games that feature one big turn, or a couple big turns, but games where there are a lot of little turns and they build up so that you have, like, every now and then you have a really, really big satisfying turn. That was, I think, an ambassador suggestion a while ago. And yeah, that was a fun video to think about and film. Been working on some Rolling Realms promo playtesting and getting some more of those promos into the works, like I mentioned earlier, where I think we have, so I'm doing them in batches of six, basically. I found that's a good way to work through them. And so we have one batch that is entering production, one that will enter production soon. So we're kind of staggering them as we go along, and soon we'll have quite a few of them in the works. We're about to enter the Chinese New Year as well, very, very soon. So all production will stop for a little while, and but that's okay. We have plenty of other things that we can work on while production is halted. And I'm just really hopeful right now that we can get all of our products out of China before the Chinese New Year starts, and that way they can make progress while production is not doing anything in China. And I also spent some time this past week sending out some games to Play and Win conventions. We have our Play and Win Google Doc that we ask and invite other publisher or other conventions who have Play and Win, the Play and Win system, to enter their information on that document. And so I send them out usually 2 months in advance of the event. So it takes a little time to do that every month, but just once a month I send out some games to conventions for Play and Win. It's part of our marketing plan. It used to be a much bigger part of our marketing plan, but I think there are fewer conventions these days because of COVID. I'm hoping they come back strong in the long run, because Play and Win, I think, was a really, really effective way to encourage people to try out games and to see if our games were a good fit for them. If you're not familiar with Play and Win, the concept is you go to a convention, they have their gaming library. So you can go to the gaming library and check anything out, but they also have a library of Play and Win games, where if you check out and play one of those games, you enter your name in a drawing. And then I think the best Play and Wins do it so that near the end of the convention, kind of mid-afternoon or afternoon on the final day, or even late morning on the final day, they do a drawing for everyone. And for each game that you played, you have a chance to win that game. But you can only win one total game over the course of the convention. That's the best way to do it. Otherwise, I think Geekway found in previous years, they had people who randomly won like four or five games. And so for every game that you gave a try and that you entered your name for, so presumably every game that you tried and enjoyed, you have a chance to win that exact game. So it isn't a complete random raffle. It's encouraging you to try out these games and see if they're for you. And if you win it, that's great. If you don't win it, then it's good for the publisher, because maybe you didn't win it and you enjoyed it, and then you might go and buy it from a vendor at that convention or buy it later from the publisher. So I think it's a win-win-win for the convention, for people coming to the attendees at the convention, and for publishers. Great, great system. Great marketing system. Christopher says, do I have a limit to the amount of worlds you want to have as a company? I wouldn't say I do. No. I generally have fun creating and exploring new worlds. As you can see, there isn't like a Stillmeyer metaverse. We haven't done a lot of crossovers between our worlds. Maybe little nods, little Easter eggs, but not a lot of crossovers. Definitely not trying to fit everything into the same world, because I have more fun, I think, exploring new worlds. So there isn't really a limit that I can think of. I think maybe the soft limit is that we only release one or two new games every year. So that might be a kind of an organic limit that happened, that limits the number of total worlds that might exist in the Stillmeyer Games universe. Chad says his wife and I are playing more casual two-player games. Do you have a few favorites that you like? I do, Chad. I'll give you a little bit of a spoiler, because I just filmed my latest video of my top 10 favorite two-player only games. It is a video that I've done in the past. I've done one of these in the past, but I haven't done one in a while, and so I revisited it. I'll give you the bottom three. No, bottom four, because that kind of applies to your question. I put Caper Europe, which is brand new to me, but I really liked it. I wanted to put it on the list. I played that right before filming this list. Caper Europe at number 10. I put Watergate at number nine. That might be not quite as casual, but still pretty casual, pretty fast. Stratego, great game, old school game, Stratego, and Patchwork. That's definitely a casual two-player game. So those are number six, 7 through 10. I'll save the top six for when I actually release that video in a few weeks. Let's see. Tim says Kemet or Kemet Blood and Sand. I've played Kemet many times. I haven't played my new copy of Kemet Blood and Sand yet, unfortunately. It's kind of an odd experience where I love Kemet. Kemet was a huge influence on Scythe, but I have generally moved away from games that have a lot of combat in them. I don't play a lot of games with combat anymore. And so I was really excited about Kemet Blood and Sand. I got it. It looks great, but I haven't actually gotten to the table yet because it isn't, for some reason, I'm not as, it's not about Kemet Blood and Sand at all. It's about just my interest in playing games with a lot of combat. Although at the same time, I love the combat in Dune Imperium. I definitely need to give it a try. It's a game that I want to get to the table, but I haven't yet, so I can't compare the two. I'm guessing Kemet Blood and Sand is better than the original Kemet, though, because I think they learned a lot from the original game. But I still really enjoy the original Kemet. Tony says, "Do you know if Pierce Brown has played Red Rising? And if so, did he play with you personally ever?" I've never met Pierce, never played Red Rising with Pierce. However, Pierce has told me that he has played Red Rising, definitely played like the final version of the prototype before we went to print. And I'm assuming he's played it since then. But I don't actually know. I know he's probably very busy living his life and writing the books. But I hope so. I think he did say that sometimes he likes to just look at the character cards because I think he likes how they were conveyed. Portrayed by the artists. Chris says that, speaking of Terry Brooks, he's a big fan of the Magic Kingdom for Sale Sold series. Sounds like Terry Brooks has a good sense of humor. But no, I haven't read that one either, or heard of that one either. But thanks for the recommendation, Chris. Steven says that he loves puzzles, and would Stonemaier Games ever consider publishing a puzzle, like a jigsaw puzzle or two? If we had the right, I don't know, the right image that worked for a puzzle that would really excite people, it is something that we might consider in the future. But at its heart, we are a game publishing company. So it isn't something that I think we pursue in a big way, but it is something we would consider if it would bring joy to tabletops. Like it is literally bringing joy to tabletops, because you that's where you put puzzles. Let's see. Mike has a puzzle recommendation. Oh, he has a lot of puzzle recommendations from Ravensburger. Oh, no, it's one long link. He says the artist for this puzzle is the artist and game designer for Dragon's Hoard, Nathaniel Mortensen. I remember that. Yeah, that's one of the a game, one of the first games I backed on Kickstarter a long, long time ago. Great artist, as I can recall. And I will share that link with Megan. Oh, that is a really beautiful puzzle. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Very beautiful. Mark says, how can he become a playtester? So the first step is to become a Stonemaier ambassador. That's not a Stonemaier champion. Stonemaier champions pay a little bit of money, they get some benefits. Stonemaier ambassadors just sign up, they fill out an application to see if they're a good fit for us, and they're essentially volunteers, oftentimes paid volunteers. We pay our playtesters. If you become a Stonemaier ambassador, every year or so, I send out a survey to Stonemaier ambassadors. A kind of a quiz, really, a test to see if they would be a good fit as a playtester. And if you pass that test, you are added to our playtester list. And then in the future, if I need a playtester for a blind playtester for a game, I refer to that list. The list has gotten fairly long at this point, and so I don't haven't even worked with all the playtesters on that list yet. But that is so. There's no guarantee, even if you get on the list, that you will be asked to be a playtester. But those are the steps for how to do it, Mark. Tim says his wife would like a batch of Rolling Realms promos. The wait is rough. It might be her new favorite game. That's great to hear, Tim. I'm glad that your wife is enjoying Rolling Realms. And over time, there will be a lot of them. I think it could easily be 2 dozen, which is a lot. And I don't expect people to buy all of them per se. Sometimes we might give them away with a new game. Sometimes we might charge very little. Like if you buy this new game, or this new expansion, here's a promo that you get along with it, that type of thing. So we're going to keep your budget in mind as we release those promo packs, because we do plan on having quite a few of them. But also, you also don't have to have all of them. I know you're not saying this, Tim, but I know we all have that collector's instinct in us as gamers, but it is okay to kind of pick and choose some of those promos over time that you think you might enjoy more than others. We'll see how that actually works out. Clint says, "What do I think of the CMON Marvel Zombies Kickstarter with a cost of around $400? Would you personally spend that amount of money for a single game?" I haven't looked too closely at that Kickstarter because I heard it was so expensive. I mean, I should probably look at it to see what the base level is. What is the lowest reward level that you can get on the Kickstarter? Because $400 is a lot. If it is a game that I think I'd really, really enjoy, maybe over time. Like, I think that people have spent essentially that amount of money on Scythe, but I think most people who have done that because they've played Scythe and really enjoyed it, and then played an expansion and really enjoyed it, and they've added like the metal coins and they've added some promos. It's piece by piece over time. I think it's very different to do that when you haven't played the game yet. However, I think it is somewhat reasonable they did it with Zombicide because I think a lot of people have played Zombicide. They already know if they enjoy Zombicide or not. So it's not a complete shot in the dark. Would I ever pay that much? So over time, maybe on a game. Over time, I might play it if you're piecing together all the different expansions, accessories for a game. But when I'm looking at a Kickstarter project, if it's over $100, I think it's exceptionally rare that I've paid over $100 before shipping for a Kickstarter game. And even that is a lot of money for me to spend on a game that I've never played before. So I think Role Player Adventures was one of the few ones where I saw it and right away was drawn into it, and got it without even thinking too much about the price. But if the price for Role Player Adventures had been over 100, it might have made me stop a little bit. I think it was really close. I think it was right around $89 or $99. But 400, man, $400 is a lot of money to spend on a game. But if it brings people joy, I mean, I'm not judging it. Just I don't know if I would do it. Is anyone here backing it? And what's your thought process behind it? And really, no judgment. If you are excited about it, that's all that matters. If that your excitement is valid and important, and your experience is valid and important, and it might be different than mine, but that's okay. That's totally okay. George says, "Have I read Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir?" I have. Yeah, this is the author who put out The Martian and then the book about the moon. That wasn't quite as well received, but I've read all of his books. I really enjoyed The Martian, both the book and the movie, and I love Project Hail Mary, and I can't wait for a movie for that one. I think the movie for that could be amazing. Really, really cool. Cameron says that he also loves Caper Europe. And Cameron, let me know how you're biased about that. I might not know this. Are you attached to that project somehow, the Caper Europe project? I'd love to know more about that. I just did my video about Caper Europe a couple days ago. Or did I do it yet? Or is it coming out later this week? No, it's coming out to, no, yeah, it just came out on January 18th. Yeah, let me see what my video is this Friday. This Friday is, oh, I have a kind of expansion video. I've started to do some expansions on Thursdays just because I have so many games in the works. Oh yeah, I'm talking about a game called Crave on Friday, a game that I really, really enjoyed. Unexpectedly, not a brand new game, one that I got on Kickstarter a while ago, has been sitting on the shelf, played it and really, really enjoyed it. Tiago says, okay, he's been away from gaming for a while because of social distancing reasons. Now with vaccines, I'm coming back and I want to know what's the status on your open world game. Last time I was here, I suggested you take a look at Ghost of Tsushima for inspiration for that. Tiago, thank you so much for that recommendation. I watched a number of videos about Ghost of Tsushima, and I love a lot of things that you mentioned. The idea that the game kind of steers you visually towards where you might need to go to solve the next step in your quest, things like that, without having like a blinking light saying, go over here, go over here. Like the wind is like blowing the grass towards that next quest. That was a great, great recommendation. Thank you for recommending that. My open world game is still in the works. It is a massive, massive open world game, and I feel bad that I've been talking about it for so long without releasing it. But I'm kind of glad I also haven't talked about many details about it because it has changed a lot over time, and it definitely will not be a 2022 release. But I am very much hoping that it'll be a 2023 release. We'll see about that if I can make that happen. I really hope so though. Connor's running out, but Connor, thanks for popping in today. It was always great to see you. Clint says, every new game by Stillmar Games must have a new realm for Ruling Realms. And that is definitely true. What I can't always guarantee, though, is that we will have the realm ready at the same time as the release of that new game. That might not always happen. Yeah. Hilda says, a custom collage of art from all of the Stillmar games would make a fun puzzle. That would be cool. Yeah, it's kind of in the line with the puzzle that was shared above. This Ravensburger puzzle has 12 different images on it. I could see that piecing together and make a really nice puzzle to have. I think we have 12 games right now. Exactly 12 games could fit together on a puzzle like that. Hilda says it could also have some sort of gamification to the puzzle, like you have to search for something within the puzzle as you're playing it. So it feels like a little bit more like a game than just a jigsaw puzzle. But nothing wrong also with something just being a jigsaw puzzle. Chad says, what is my favorite stage of the game publishing process? The publishing portion of it, not the game design process. What is my favorite part of it? I don't know. It's always really nice. It's not really a stage, but it's also really nice when we get to the end of blind play testing and we know the game is really, really working for blind play testers. That always feels really good because we don't always get there. Not every game gets there. And so it's always reassuring that we're like, okay, all this work that we put into this has actually resulted in something that is fun that people really enjoy. That feels really good. I also love getting the, well, no, I both love and dread getting the pre-production copy and the mass production copy because it's so exciting to see the game in its final form for the first time. I would say actually a pre-production copy for that. I definitely just love to get it. And I know there's stuff that we'll find in there that we need to fix. The mass production copy is the one where I've already seen the game. There's more dread to that because I've already seen the game. This is like the first copy off the print run. And we can still change something if there's a really, really big error in it, but ideally you wouldn't change anything at that point. And so there's definitely a sense of dread when I'm opening and playing that mass production copy in case something has gone wrong, because I know how much it will delay everything if we have to fix it. But it's still worth fixing. If it's something that's really important to fix, we will still fix it at that stage. Yeah. Yokten says, "Have you cons would you consider doing playtesting in a digital platform like Tabletop Simulator or Tabletopia?" We do sometimes. Sometimes we're kind of pitched games in that format, and I'm fine with being taught by a designer and shown how to play a game on Tabletopia. We don't typically use it for playtesting ourselves because I think it's so important, or so helpful, I think. And so important to get it to a real table and use your real hands with the real pieces and play that way. Aside from the frustration of those physics-driven platforms, I think it's just really, really helpful to actually interact with the cards and seeing like how often are you shuffling this deck? Because Tabletop Simulator, Tabletopia makes it very easy to shuffle a deck of cards. In real life, if you're shuffling the deck every few seconds, that's really annoying because you're having to actually do that. And so it's good to actually tactfully do that on the table. So most of our playtesting, the vast majority of it, is on the actual tabletop. Austin says that the lowest price level for this new Simon Marvel project is $130. $130, that is quite a bit. Tonk says, have I ever considered a Magic University theme for a Stillmire game? Yeah, magical academies are one of my favorite fictional themes. I really, really love that theme. I feel like I did play a game recently that was within that theme. It's like the Harry Potter theme, right? The magical academy. You're going to school at magical academy. I think that would be a wonderful theme to include. I think, did I include that in my list of favorite themes? Let me see. I did a video recently about my favorite. I think I might have done favorite fictional themes, but let me see if I included. Yeah, my top 10 favorite tabletop game themes. Castles, fantasy, sci-fi, adventure, city building, magical academy, Maddie's, and magical academies. Yeah, and I talk about the Magic the Gathering set called Strixhaven, which fully embraced that theme and did a great job with it. But I do love that theme. That is on my top 10 tabletop game theme list. And so I would love to see more games of that theme and maybe publish a game with that theme. Let's see. Chad says, I had someone try to return a copy of Scythe because they didn't like the name Olga and couldn't play the game because the character existed. That is very odd. What's the weirdest reason for a return or rejection that you've heard? And Chad, I'm very curious how you dealt with that. Like, did you let them, like, it's obviously, it's no secret that the character's name is Olga. That's a very odd reason to return a game. I'm very curious how you dealt with that. What's the weirdest reason for a return or rejection that you've heard? Not necessarily for, I mean, I don't know if I have any particular weird reasons, because I mean, we don't take many returns. The returns that we take are if a game is still in shrink. And so it is always odd to me if someone says, I have bought this game or this expansion, it is from you, and it's still in shrink, and I want to now return it. Because they then have to, they have to pay for shipping to return it back. We don't offer free return shipping. That we don't take that on as our responsibility. So it's just kind of weird to me when we do get a return from someone who hasn't opened the game yet, because that's the only condition when we will receive that we'll accept a return. Yeah. So it's, I think in general, it happens very rarely, but when it does happen, I'm like, why did you buy it in the first place if you weren't even going to open it up and just send it back to us? That's always a little odd. Austin said that he backed the highest tier of the new CMON campaign. He says he knows it's something his entire family will love, and with a Marvel skin, it will get a lot of play. That was kind of my approach with the recent Dice Throne spinoff, the Marvel Dice Throne spinoff, where Dice Throne, I love Dice Throne, and I love Marvel, and so I wanted to get it, even though it was fairly expensive. Tim says, have I checked out the sample of the Bulletproof Ghost by Jake DH yet? I have not. I have a few books that I had already bought on my Kindle yet, Tim. So I have to get through those books first, and then I'll start looking through samples to see what I want to read next. But I do appreciate the recommendation. Navia also says that they bought Marvel or backed Simon's Marvel Zombies. And Chad says, what's my favorite scene of the game, stage of the game design process? Definitely, I mean, the most fun, it isn't the most relevant, but the most fun for me is the brainstorming stage, the earliest stage where I'm just brainstorming what the game could be, because then it has infinite potential. It can be anything at that stage. It has the potential to be awesome and amazing and really interesting and innovative. And it usually doesn't end up that way, but during the brainstorming stage, anything is possible. And I just try to check myself and not get too caught up in that, because it is very easy to get caught up in the brainstorming stage and not actually get to the game to the table and help it start evolving and iterating, or deciding this actually isn't brilliant and innovative and unique, and to work on something else instead. But I do love that brainstorming stage. Mark says, which three realms do you think have the best synergy with each other to score a lot of stars? Ooh, that's a tough one, Mark. I did there's probably like an optimal combination out there. What was the one recently? I got a very, very good score recently. And the combination, let's see if this is it. Yeah, the combination was Pendulum, Between Two Cities, and My Little Scythe. And I got a 19.6, which is a very good score for Rolling Realms. So that is a, that's a, that's a good combination, apparently. Chad says he didn't accept the return because it was open, which I think is a valid thing to do. If the game is open, yeah, that's the same. We have the same policy. Yeah. George says, will you consider making other clothing products for ambassadors in the future? Other orange clothing besides the orange t-shirt. I missed the beginning period when the orange hoodie was available and was just curious. George, you know, I'm glad I asked about that. Let me put a question on the next ambassador survey to see if ambassadors would like another style. What style of shirt would you like? And I'm happy to consider that for the future. The only kind of unfortunate side of it is that there needs to be some sort of consensus behind it, because we buy these shirts in bulk. We take pre this one of the few things where we accept pre-orders and then make the shirts in bulk, because they're so much more cost-effective if we do it that way. And also the other factor is quality materials. We use t-shirts that are really, really high quality material, but hoodies aren't usually as high quality, or there aren't as high quality options in the colors that we're looking for. So maybe we just need to open up about colors a little bit and pick something that still looks good, but also can feel really good as well. And part of my thinking behind this, George, I don't know if this is what you're thinking, but at like conventions, the type of places where you might want to wear a Stonemaier a shirt so that people can see who you are and ask you questions about our games. Convention halls can get kind of cold sometimes because they have the air conditioning on blast. And so, especially in the summer. And so, having a longer sleeve shirt can be really helpful. So, I think a hoodie might be helpful in that way. Tiago says, you'd be shocked with how Brazilian law works on returns. Anything you buy remotely can be returned just because you didn't like it after being opened and used. Really? That's very consumer friendly, but that's tough to for the publisher, for the companies, because if something's used, you may not be able to sell it at all after that. It's just scrap parts after that. Wow. Very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. Tim says, do you have the next promo realm picked out for release? I do. I do. The date is slightly nebulous based on some other factors, but I do know what it is because it's in that original batch of three promo packs that we made. It's the third one of those. So it's already made. We already have it. Just waiting for the right moment to release it. Navi also says that they wouldn't mind getting a hoodie style of ambassador t-shirt. And Neek says they would love more color options for the shirts and hoodies. That's a little tougher. I do appreciate that, but the orange is so distinctive. Like it's a distinctively ambassador thing. If you want more colors, I'd recommend becoming a Stonemaier champion because we do change the color of the Stonemaier champion shirt every year. The orange is there, you know, to be very distinctive so that when you go to an event, people can identify you as a Stonemaier ambassador. But the champion shirt is just a good looking shirt that we're trying to hopefully make you look good in. And so we change up the colors every year. So that might be an approach to take. We usually do those shirts in like August, September, sometimes October. And last year we did green. I think I want to do a blue one this year. I don't think we've done blue yet. No, we did green the previous year. We did red this year. Great red design from Miles Penske. And I kind of want to do blue. We'll see if we can do blue this year. Yeah. All right, we've reached 11 o'clock. As always, I really appreciate this conversation. We jumped around a lot today, but I love your questions. Thank you for being respectful of my desire not to ask spoiler questions. I really appreciate that. And if you do have any non-spoiler questions, feel free to post them in the YouTube version of this video. I'll throw this over on YouTube in a few minutes, and that's where we can continue this conversation. Otherwise, I'll see you next week for my next live cast, or I'll see you later this afternoon for a Rolling Realms live play, which I'll be doing over in the Rolling Realms Facebook group. All right, take care. Have a great day and great week. Bye.